The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
On today's show, we're talking with Karen Ward. She's a drug policy advisor with the City of Vancouver, as well as a downtown East Side artist. It's great to hear from you and to have you back on first thing in 2021 here.
A happy new year, and happy new fears to you, David.
We're doing a lot of looking back over 2020. It was a really hard year. Is there anything that you kind of bring from 2020 with you into this new year?
I guess the one thing is that I hope one thing that we can take away, if we look back, is to stop second guessing ourselves. We need to act rather than react quicker, and trust each other, I think, a lot more, and try to avoid. We need to recognize that this is a different situation, I guess, would be my main takeaway.
What do you mean by trusting ourselves more? Tell me a bit about what that means to you.
We have to say, well, when someone comes up with something and sees something that they've never seen before, that is, not to reuse a word that's overly used, but unprecedented, I've noticed that we almost always question ourselves. Well, that can't be right. I can't be right. You know, the response that makes sense is outrageous. You know, we question ourselves, and then it's much more easily resisted, I think, and these are the necessary ideas. These are the necessary things.
It sounds like you're talking about gaslighting, but on a community level, on a systemic level.
On a systemic level, to the point where people are doing it to themselves, actually, where people question their own thought and undermine themselves. It is in fact, you know, widespread in a kind of lateral, you know, quote unquote community sense. Definitely, there's a serious resistance to transformative change, and transformative change is what is very much needed.
Now, I think we've all kind of recognized the systemic gaslighting and things like every time that we're shocked by some other illegal thing that Donald Trump has done. But here in Vancouver, in the downtown East Side, in the work you're doing, can you give us an example of how that kind of has happened over the last year?
Well, I mean, it's in a general sense. First of all, it's people saying, oh, well, it can't get any worse. It can't get worse than this. And you know, when people were saying that was 4 years ago, you know, and that's... That's become a reaction that is actually so repetitive that it's a joke and it's not helpful. Well, are we going to just wait till it gets worse next time? Are we going to wait a week till it gets worse and we could say that again and feel like it's become a situation where complaining is considered almost as a replacement for doing something. And it's actually not. If you look at the big system, I mean, the big system in the small pond, if you like, in the downtown East Side, it hasn't actually changed at all. It has not changed since 2016. And if you look at the individual, you know, break that down into organizational structures, into informal community structures, even into the way that we do community politics and organize, they have not changed in a substantial way. Certainly not enough to to acknowledge what has happened here. They have not. That has not fundamentally, structurally happened.
What has happened here? Kind of run us through the kind of your takeaways from last year as to the tragedies and also the victories that we saw, the things that really shook up the year.
Over a person a day has died in this very small place for the last 4 years. In the city and the majority of those people who have died have been part of this neighborhood.
And that's just in Vancouver, province-wide. It hit over six people a day in the first wave of COVID.
In the neighborhood, these are people we know. These are people that we see every day. These people are part of, we're part of a network. This is how we connected. People that we don't have actually anything else. Think of it as a mutual aid network. Think of it as the way that you interact with, you know, I know that guy and he has a cousin and that cousin knows this guy. And that's actually how we all interconnect. That becomes our like, bigger than a family, but it's our society. It's a society that is rejected from the big picture. So this is all we actually had, right? It's the idea that connection is interpersonal, informal. It's a mutual aid network in essence, and that has fallen apart. You know, the information that I would get from this person, from that person, there's someone in that connection is dead. So our communications are broken. All of this is broken, and that is a very, I mean, to me, it's an obvious and clear, like, we all know this. This is why things are so messed up. People, all those people have died. It's just not the same place. It's not the same place that it was. Like, if people can't say, well, this, you know, and people don't realize this because they don't recognize our full humanity. They don't recognize that a very small community, that many people, this compressed, this dense, a small neighborhood. I mean, this is a decimation, and that's how you destroy people. That is why things are messed up so much right now.
Like you're tearing apart the threads of a blanket.
It is the threads. It is what connected us. It is what held things together because nothing else did.
Yeah.
Failing to recognize that and in the big picture, and failing to simply say that on the part of the quasi of like the societies, the organizations, the directors, the people who also for so long have the PHS is like failing to recognize that, failing to say it and acknowledge it and to say that we must therefore change fundamentally. That this is different now. This is not the same place. Failing to recognize that and assert it is a massive failure.
Do you think it's possible to stitch back this mutual aid together? Is it any way of doing it? Because there's been so many obituaries in the last year on top of 4 years of obituaries before that.
No, I don't. I reject this. It's not an opioid crisis. This is about so much more as we experience it here. Because it's not about opioids. It's not about a class of drugs. It's not actually about drugs. It's about drug policy. So like, let's, you know, and saying it's about a particular drug just feeds the hand of criminalization and policing. So it allows them to say, we're getting the drugs off the street. And that's the way we're going to, like, which is nonsense. So it's about drug policy. And it's about, fundamentally, it's about injustice, right? It's injustice that's fatal. And there's so many ways that people die of poverty, you know, of racism, of colonialism. And it's compounded on everything else, and then you add over like a death a day from this. So it feels like a massacre because it is. It feels like you can't get out of like a death spiral because it's true.
Hmm.
And these feel, you know, these are accurate senses because I don't think we could put it back together in the exact same way. That's not how history works.
No.
I think we need to have we very much need to have a conversation about how we want to put, what do we want to put back together? What do we want futures to look like? If it's externally imposed, it's not going to be, it won't be good for people. And it won't, you know, and it won't be the change that we need.
Is there anyone, Karen, that you've lost in the last year that you'd like to share a word of honor or memory of? I know there's so many.
Thomas Donaghy was killed when he was working at the OPS,
the overdose prevention site at St. Paul's.
It broke my heart. I mean, Thomas, he'd worked in overdose prevention since the very beginning, since before the beginning, you know.
And he was a peer. He was somebody who was in the community, who was known, who was a substance user before, and had the connection and trust of people.
Very much so. And I mean, he would finish his shift and then go out and walk through the alleys and make sure people were okay there too. And he was, I mean, he was, he was a kind of, he was, you know, I go to these meetings all the time where people are just horrible, and people are just like say the worst things about drug users and you know, condemn us to death all the time. And I remember he came to one of those meetings and wanted to learn and listen, and he was shocked. He was shocked that people could say such things and didn't understand, and was asking me, and he just didn't understand. And that was a beautiful thing.
You know what that reminds me of? Go back to the start of our interview, and you talked about not being gaslit anymore and kind of feeling our authentic outrage and feelings and having an authentic reaction. This is wrong. And I think Thomas had that in a way that you also have, Karen. This you can't accept people treating each other this way.
That's right. And we can't just get into the habit of doing it ourselves either. And that's what has happened so very much in the neighborhood. Like it's horrible. And yes, he was shocked by it. And didn't understand and refused to understand. That's what I'm always get back to saying. It doesn't have to be this way. It really doesn't. This is a choice. We don't have to do this to each other, obviously. And we don't have to accept it either. I mean, when people who are, people who are poor and who are, organizing in poor people's organizations, and then they use poverty against each other. I mean, that's not okay. You know, when people who are saying that they're fighting against, for something on behalf of low income people or the neighborhood or whatever, when they exploit each other and when they exploit people who say to support them, that's not okay. And when you somehow assume that because people are poor or use drugs or are homeless, that they won't understand all the information that's involved and they don't need to know all of the details. That's wrong. That's wrong, and that's insulting. And I reject that habit because it has become a habit in the neighborhood.
It sounds like you're saying that you're hoping that in the year 2021, people can actually learn to work together respectfully.
I mean, I think it needs to start with an acknowledgement that we've got to change, that it's different. We have to change, and let's put that behind us. And if we're going to be serious about change, we have to change ourselves and how we work with each other before we can change anything in the greater society, surely, right? I mean, if we can't keep these patterns that are manifestations of the same structural violence that we're fighting. So let's just, and how can we heal if we don't get past that? Nothing will. Nothing will get better. And so much has to. I mean, you can't condemn people when they start trying to articulate a different idea. Let's just listen to them and hear everybody out. Let's try to do things differently. Let's not rely on old patterns. I mean, I think that's something that we can say, surely here in the Downtown East Side, but probably needs to be understood out there as well, everywhere else. And we need to understand that we are actually part of the world. And let's do that. Let's not cut ourselves off, because we do that all the time, almost reflexively. Let's just not. Let's assume that we're in it. Let's know that we are.
What do you think that 2021 holds for the Downtown East Side and the community that's there?
We're having a problem, right? Because it's very difficult to have conversations and meet and come together right now because of COVID, and because we are, in that sense, we can't meet. So we are trying to take care of each other. But I hope we can break down some of the walls between us. I really hope that we can break into a new kind of conversation, because otherwise I'm really scared, honestly, that we're not going to be able to get through this in any way.
Tell me more about that. What makes you the most scared?
The housing. This is a breaking point. It feels like a breaking point to me. We surely can't. I mean, we can't, this is not sustainable. It really isn't. And in terms of overdoses and overdose prevention is harm reduction. And there is so much harm, and it is getting so much more harmful that we need to change, not what we do, but we've got to do so much more. The government must move, or we are all going to die.
You know, I'm hearing sirens in your background, and this weekend was the first weekend of the new year and had nothing but sirens all Saturday night.
It's been horrible. Yeah, it's been really
horrible. There was that standoff. It seems like there's a breaking point happening.
It feels like that. And because, I mean, I hear that from people all day long, that they just can't take it anymore. They don't know what to do. It's because first you're just struggling to survive, and then how long can you tread water? You know, how long can you, that's just it. It feels like that. And it's the grind, right? How long can you do the grind until there's nothing left of you? This is it's exhausting in a way that is difficult to convey.
Hmm.
I feel it too.
Is there a way that you have found has helped you kind of carry your fire forward and keep it going through all of the tragedy, through all the sirens, through all the setbacks?
Art has saved me in a big way, and have being able to translate some of my thinking in that sense. But art has very much, making art has saved me. I'm finding it very difficult to make art right now, you know, very difficult.
What is it about the art process for you?
It's finding that quiet space in my mind, and being able to focus on something that's about making something of its own, in bringing something else into the world. That's all. I mean, it can be really silly stuff too. Don't get me wrong. It's not, but it's just that act of having a focused on something that's generative of itself and not, I mean, I just feel like I'm spending 20 hours a day running, like trying to desperately solve problems and shake some sense into people who, and it's very frustrating, you know, and you feel like you've done nothing. You feel like you're getting nothing done all the time. And or things are getting worse. I've got nothing done, and now you broke that too, you know. But if you can take a few minutes and make something or make a cartoon or something, anything, then you've actually just created something in the world, and it's real, and that's really, really, really helpful.
I wonder if it also has you trust your instincts.
It does. It does.
So you talked about that earlier, and that's like you're not depending on anyone else's approval or direction to find that well within you.
Yeah, I mean I do have a process where I think things through, but it is, yeah, when it's ready to, when I know I'm done, when I know it's finished, you know, in terms of, you know, to blur the boundary between art and whatever it is I do, it is a confidence that I'm done and that's ready and I'm sure of it.
I wanted to talk about memes. You've obviously found some benefit to all of these Spider-Man memes from the original cartoon Spider-Man, everything from, you know, talking about mental health to, you know, looking at this sort of almost comical finger pointing between the federal government, the city and the province, or between the BC Center on Substance Use and health authorities and the Center for Disease Control and activists.
Yeah, and they're all Spider-Men. I really enjoy that because I what I like about it is that it's one thing, and you can just slice right to the core of it. It's one thing, but the other thing is that when people laugh, when you can get people to laugh, there's an openness where you can get the most outrageous ideas in there, can't you? That moment of laughter is some such openness, and people are receptive to stuff that they've never thought of before, and they rarely, very rarely are. And I love that. I've always been a very, I've been a hopeful satirist for a while. So, and trying to be subtle about making points that are kind of scary, I think. But it's a very good way. And, you know, 1967 Spider-Man is so easy. It's so great for him to convey these ideas because it's such an innocent, you know, character. it's just lovely. So it's, and there's so much material there. My God. So I enjoy that a lot. And we are all Spider-Man, really. You know, we can bring that kind of idea and that you know, everyone says it because no one says it kind of thing. It makes it a lot safer for people who would otherwise not even listen. You know, so that's neat in itself. But I like, and again, so accessible, so accessible. We have no print media. We have not everybody. So many people are just on Facebook, which is just nonsense. You can throw something like that anywhere and people see it. And that's only more, become more and more needed. So, good Lord. So I'm hoping that, that's great. And that's fun. And that is fun for me too. That is, I mean, I do, sometimes I get, I don't know if I'm doing art or if I'm doing politics, but I sure like that gray area.
You'd like a little bit less Spider-Man's pointing at each other with blame and more solutions in the new year. Are there any solutions that you'd like to see, like, this year finally come to fruition, finally get enacted to stave off these crises that you're trying to make change on?
Let's have some housing, because this is not that complicated. This is a, it's a big long-term problem. We have... So there's that one. There's the poverty again. Like, this is a, it's a complicated disaster, but the solutions are all independently very simple, but they just need to fit together, right? So this is, I mean, I think that the and so many of these problems, the solutions lie primarily with the provincial government. I am concerned that they have, I have, you know, in my darker moments, I think, oh, they've abandoned us completely and thrown us away. I guess, I mean, I need to try to get through to them.
It sounds like you'd like some help with that, with the province.
Yeah, I think we have to recognize that that is a very, very important, like, that is the focus of so many of our urgent issues right now. And we have a timeline. We have to do this right now. It's this upcoming budget. We have to do this right now. We have a time limit. The clock is ticking. We are almost out of time.
What's the one thing you'd like to see change when it comes to harm reduction and drug policy this year, realistically?
Realistically, we're not going to abolish the police in like 10 minutes. So that's not going to happen instantly.
That might take a week or two.
That may take a week. Yeah. I do think that what I would really like, honestly, which would make a big difference, is I'd like the two emergencies. You know, I don't want them to. It's not realistic to say treat them. I just want equity. There's no way that we would spend 6 months waiting for the clinic on COVID to open in the province. People would not stand for that. We have been waiting since August 4th for funding to be delivered for inhalation sites. Inhalation, the mode of consumption that is responsible for 40% of overdose deaths is inhalation. And nothing has been done. Nothing. The province has not even acknowledged this. They don't seem to understand that this is what's happening. So can we give these people somewhere to go and some options so they don't die? That's pretty simple. So things like that. We're waiting. It's been August 4th. That was 5 months ago. 5 months ago. Like, I thought this was an emergency. So things like that. Yes. I'd like that sort of equity, that the urgency, the fact that actually everyone is human, to be understood and enacted, not just word, but to be enacted like it matters. Like it matters very much. Like it is a matter of life and death, because it is. So, like, yeah, that's what I'd like. I'd like people to not get to be paid equitably. I'd like them to have sick leave. I'd like it so much if we'd acknowledge that people, that the street is a workplace, and that workplace transmission is the most, like, is the where the virus is active.
Those seem achievable.
They shouldn't be outrageous. You know, that shouldn't be, can we acknowledge reality, shouldn't be an outrageous thing to ask.
Do you have any personal resolutions for 2021, Karen?
No.
You don't do them?
I don't. I hoped last year would be my last year of drug policy, and look what happened. I'm really tired of it, and I'm tired of it. Oh, geez, I do not want to keep on doing this, you know, because I don't, you know, I want this to end.
Well, thank you so much for sharing those hopes with us.
Oh, well, thank you, David. I appreciate this opportunity and your time as well.
Yeah, take good care. And I hope that 2021 is full of health and hopefully art and more Spider-Man memes.
Oh, you got the last one. Don't worry about that.
Thanks so much, Karen. Have a great day. And that was Karen Ward, a drug policy advisor with the City of Vancouver, as well as a local artist and activist and resident of the Downtown East Side.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.